This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. On Thursday, the governor signed Ohio's new budget into law 17 days after the constitutional deadline. Why was it a challenge for the Republican-controlled legislature to reach a consensus on revenue and spending? Ohio Governor Mike DeWine talked earlier with WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson and me to discuss that and what made the budget and why and how he feels about the racist tweets sent by President Donald Trump. Governor Mike DeWine, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you. Appreciate it.
So you've signed a budget after a lengthy delay. Tell us what the highlights are after all this time that we waited for this thing to come in. What's going to stand out?
You know, I think this is really a budget for the future of the state of Ohio. I'll go back to, you know, what I said in my State of the State speech. And what I said then was that, you know, I was going to ask the General Assembly to do things that they might not see the direct result immediately, but it would be an investment in our future. So this budget really is an investment in our children. It's an investment in our workers. It's an investment in clean water, Lake Erie. It really, I think, is a very far-sighted budget. I'm very happy. We got, you know, good bipartisan support at different times throughout this process, and I think it's a very forward-looking budget.
One thing related to younger people is that you've increased the minimum tobacco purchasing age to 21. You did veto a provision that would grandfather in people who turn 18 by October 1st this year, and you also added a tax on vaping products. Why was that important?
You know, we've known for a long time that if we can get someone to 21 and they've not started to smoke, the odds are they're not going to smoke. That period from 15, 16, you know, up to 20 or so is just vitally important. And that's the time when people either start smoking or they don't start smoking. There's some exceptions to that, but that's basically what we have found. We're facing a real crisis. You know, we have made progress over the years in regard to the percentage of people in society who are smoking. But what we've seen in the last several years is a real spike among young people who are not necessarily smoking, but they're using, they're vaping, and they're getting the nicotine, they're becoming addicted to the nicotine. And we're now seeing some really alarming statistics that show the number of the people, young people who become addicted to nicotine with the vaping, move over then to tobacco. So, you know, we certainly don't want to discourage someone, you know, who's 40 years old, who's a smoker, who thinks that, you know, they can get off smoking by vaping. That may be a very rational decision. But what we don't want to see is more and more young people become addicted to nicotine. So, you know, we took action in this budget. I think it was the right thing to do. I know it's the right thing to do. We raised the age to 21. We did impose, you know, some tax on vaping. And I just think it's the right thing to do. We've got to try to discourage young people from going down that pathway.
WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson is also with us in the studio, and he's got some questions as well.
Governor, you know, the one thing that struck me about this is there was a June 30th deadline for this budget. And obviously, you're a Republican. The House is dominated by Republicans. The Senate's dominated by Republicans, but they couldn't meet the deadline. What was the problem?
You know, Howard, I think the real hang-up was over the tax issue. We did, you know, ultimately get that resolved. My suggestion, well, first of all, when I introduced my budget, I said, look, let's leave taxes alone. Let's don't raise them. Let's don't lower them. You know, we'd had 8 years of some tax cuts, which were good. And I looked at this and said, look, let's move forward. Let's invest in Ohio. The Senate had a little different view. The House had a little different view from the Senate. And so that, you know, I think was the real hang up. We ended up with a across the board small tax cut. And at the same time, you know, did not raise the tax on small business men and women. That was one of the contentious issues, and we ended up with a with a budget that did not do that. So I think it was a good compromise. I think it, you know, makes a lot of sense. But, you know, the majority of what this budget does is a real long-term investment. For example, early childhood education, early childhood development. We know that the first 5 years of life, in fact, when the, you know, from basically from conception on, it's the most important period of time for a young person. And we're seeing kids that come into kindergarten who are way behind through absolutely no fault of their own. So we put a lot of emphasis in this budget on getting those kids up to speed by the time they start kindergarten. It's just, it really is something that I think is a real investment in our future.
And just for some background, according to the reporting, the House version of the budget originally, which had support from Democrats, would have scrapped tax breaks given to small business owners that made more than $100,000 a year. And then the Senate liked the current system, which allows those businesses to take up to $250,000 tax-free. And that's the system that will remain, it sounds like. Okay.
Basically, yeah. That's right. I think the only exception are lobbyists and attorneys, and that was, they made that exception. But with everybody else, there was going to be no tax increase there.
Well, let's talk about education. There were some heated debates about proposed changes to education. What are you happiest about when it comes to the education funding in the bill?
You know, for years, no matter where I was or where I travel in Ohio, teachers have told me that their real challenge is not what goes on in the classroom. The real challenge is what goes on outside the classroom. That, child comes to school hungry. Child is in extreme poverty, and they have all kinds of, you know, real challenges. Some child has a mental health problem. Another one has a parent who's an addict. So what we did in my proposed budget, and I'm really happy that the Senate and House really both kept this, we took some money, really the kind of the growth money in the amount of money we had available for our K through 12 schools, about $550 million over a two-year period of time. We set that money aside and said that money is going to be used for what we call wraparound services. It might be a mental health help for a child. It might be tutoring. It might be, you know, something else having to do with the child's medical condition. But trying to address this concern that has been expressed by so many teachers to me. After we introduced it, or after we proposed it to the General Assembly, I got some great results or great feedback from educators about that. And so I'm very happy about that. It allows the local school district, the people who know the school the best, to make a decision exactly how that money is going to be spent. But it does say it's going to be spent for wraparound services. And this is something that I think, you know, we're very, very proud of in this budget. It's something that is new, but it's something that I think educators have waited for a long time.
The state has taken over a few school districts and that were deemed to be in academic distress, and this new budget puts a moratorium on state takeovers until next year, and that's to offer some time for these districts to come up with better solutions for some of their either perceived or real failures. I wonder what your thoughts are on the state's role in local education.
Well, I think we have to strike a balance, and I don't think we've really struck that balance yet. So I was a little disappointed that the legislature was not able to come up with a solution to the problem. They basically, as you pointed out, put a moratorium so no more schools can go into this category. But that does not help the three schools that are already in the category. We need to come up with a way that we don't wait until the school drops off the cliff before we do something. So what I would like to see us do is, offer that school additional aid earlier on to help rectify the problem, because we're really not dealing with the school, we're dealing with kids. And we have an obligation at the state level to make sure every child has the opportunity to learn. And when you see a school that is failing, what that means is that children we're failing those kids. So we want to try to keep the local control. We want to keep the local school board engaged. But at the same time, we just can't turn our back on it and say we're not going to worry about it. We have an obligation to do something about it. So what I hope when the General Assembly comes back, that they will dig in, work with us, and come up with a reasonable solution to this problem that has a couple elements. One, we keep the local control. Number two, we offer that school some more assistance, and that may be, you know, that may be taking money to do something, but we offer them, get them some more assistance, get them some more help. So those are two things that I think are very, very important. The third is that, you know, we do make available some resources to that school, and there may be some expertise that we need to make available to that school so that they can help the children who are going to the school. You know, kids only have one chance to grow up. And so for an adult, 2 or 3 years is maybe not a big deal. For a child who's 5 or 6 or 7, you know, that's a huge part of their lifetime. So only one chance to grow up. We gotta help these kids to get it right.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, alongside WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Our guest today is Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
Governor, where would those resources for the schools come from?
Howard, we're just going to have to make that available from the state. You know, we have this balance in Ohio. We all believe in local control. We have 630-some school districts. You know, we think it's better if the local community is making the decisions about the school. But the Constitution of Ohio puts the burden on the state. The state is an entity. And so if we have kids who are in schools that aren't just performing the way they should, ultimately, the buck stops with the state. We've got to intervene. Now, what the legislature had passed a few years ago has worked in some cases. In some cases, it has not. And that is this distress commission where the school basically kind of falls off the cliff and the state comes in and a CEO is appointed. You know, we have that today in East Cleveland. We have it in Lorain. We have it in Youngstown. But we have other school districts that are getting close to possibly going into that situation. And what we've found is that when you totally take away control from the local community, that just creates problems. So the local community's got to retain some control, but we just can't let status quo. Status quo, you know, had not worked in the past. We don't have any reason to think it's going to work in the future. So what I would propose we do is give that school district and give that board and give that superintendent the opportunity to come back and say, okay, here's how we think we can fix this. And then the state give them some help to actually implement that.
The budget also maintained the $40 million motion picture tax credit, and that was extremely important to the Cincinnati Film Commission. Cincinnati has seen a real boon in its role in Hollywood productions, from television series to feature films. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, because there is debate over whether this investment really pays off in the long run. What are your thoughts on motion picture tax credits?
I support that. I think we have an industry that's emerging in the state of Ohio that we need to nurture. I think we need to encourage, you know, and it's not just the money that was put in. I think we have to continue to analyze what else we can do, what else the state can do to grow this industry. We've seen it in some states create a huge number of jobs. You know, if you doubt that, look at how many times when you see a show and at the end of the show when the credits are running or the movie is running, you see this peach, which is a Georgia peach, and it, you know, this real quick thing on the screen says that this has been produced in Georgia. Georgia has done, I think, very well in that area. So this is an industry that should grow in Ohio, and you're right. We're seeing it grow in Cincinnati. We're seeing it grow in Cleveland. Other parts of the state, had movies that have been partially made in Dayton. So it's a growing industry, and I think we need to nurture that industry.
Governor, how does this budget address the opioid crisis directly?
It really takes it on, and thank you for asking about that. I think the most important thing it does is, again, and this is in the long run, this is a budget that is focused on the long run, but education and prevention is the most important thing we can do. So under this budget, for the first time, there's going to be resources to local schools to start in kindergarten and K through 12 every single year, every school in the state, every single child. We will be able to focus on what the educators call social emotional learning, which is basically helping these kids make good decisions. And ultimately what this means is that they're going to be less likely to go down the pathway of addiction, not just opiates. It could be alcohol. It could be any other kind of addiction. We know that there are certain curriculum, there are certain things that if we teach and if we work on in schools, these have been proven to work. They've been proven to dramatically reduce the addiction rate down. So education and prevention is number one. It's the most important thing. Number two, the law enforcement side, we don't forget about that. We put some resources into some of the big multi- and sometimes not so big, but multi-jurisdiction task forces that might involve the local sheriff, it might involve the local prosecutor or the local police departments. What we have found is that there's some models that work exceedingly well, but these local departments need help. So the money that we've put forward in this budget can be used to pay for some of these officers. The local law enforcement many times does not have the money to loan that officer to a local task force. So that's going to enable us to crack more down more on the Mexican drug cartels that's bringing these drugs into the state of Ohio. The third thing is treatment. Treatment's very important, and what we've been lacking is a situation where everybody, no matter what county they live in, if they have an addiction problem, they can find some local help. So the initial help is very important. You got to get that person into some sort of program, and there is significant money in this budget to try to help in that regard as well. The opiate epidemic, we've sort of morphed from one epidemic into another. It started as a pain med problem. We saw people become addicted to pain meds who then moved over to heroin. Heroin is, very dangerous, but what people have been doing and what the Mexican drug cartels have been pushing is the people who are heroin addicts, get them to move over to the fentanyl. Fentanyl is 50 or 60 times, as you know, more potent than the heroin is. It's why our death rate continues to stay up. We've made some progress overall in the death rate in Ohio. It's gone down some. The number of pain meds prescribed has certainly gone down as well. So we're headed in the right direction, but the how lethal this drug now is, the fentanyl is what is keeping the death rate up.
And the law enforcement agencies, they're still saying, look, we're just overwhelmed by this. We don't have enough resources to be able to take care of this and also do our other jobs, which are many. How does the state help them?
Well, it's not just law enforcement. It's the EMS squads.
Mm-hmm, sure.
They're overwhelmed. They're traumatized by, many times going back to the same people, the same household, being called back in the same week. Trying to revive someone, trying to save their life. So this is very tough on these squads, on our first responders. But you're right. It's a real strain on law enforcement. It's a real strain on the court system. One of the ways that we help the police in this bill is what I said a moment ago, which is more resources into these task forces so that they can put a part-time police officer, a full-time police officer into the task force so that they can concentrate on the drug problem. It takes resources. Many departments simply do not have the resources they can loan an officer. So this is certainly one thing that makes a difference. Something else in the criminal justice system, we are encouraging the creation of more drug courts. Drug courts are very useful. They've been very successful. Basically, the concept is that take someone who goes into court because they're an addict, they've been charged with possession of drugs. Judge can look at them and say, look, your problem is you're an addict. We want to help you. We're going to put you in this program. Now, you're going to have to do what we tell you. You're going to have to, give a sample of urine whenever we tell you to. And we're going to hound you. We're going to stay on you. But if you complete the program, if you stay clean for a certain period of time, then we will dismiss these charges. We'll dismiss the criminal case. So we're going to set this criminal case just aside for a while and see whether you can make it. What we've found and what judges tell me is, and also recovering addicts have told me, is that people sometimes need that push. It's so pervasive, it's so tough, the addiction, that they just can't get away from it. But if they're presented a real choice, you're going to prison or you're going to go into treatment, that's the push sometimes that many of them need. So these drug courts do a absolutely phenomenal job, and the judges are great, and their staffs, they work very, very hard. They really work with that person. And look, relapse is a part of recovery. And so they don't always make it on the first time or the second time or even the third time. But these judges will hang in there with them, work with them, tough love. And there's many people alive today in Ohio because they've gone through the drug court, and these judges have really given that tough love and have saved their life.
Governor, I know we don't have a lot of time left with you. We can get a couple more questions in. On Wednesday, you're expected to attend a fundraiser on behalf of the reelection of President Donald Trump. Obviously, over the past several days, a lot of the country has been talking about the racist tweets that the president sent. I'm wondering if it's difficult for you at all to appear at such a fundraiser with candidate or the president himself after these types of remarks.
Well, the president's comments were obviously inappropriate. We are a nation of immigrants. Every one of us came here one way or the other. Unless we're Native Americans, we came here, and we're a nation of immigrants. So we respect that. We also respect the rule of law. But his comments about the four members of Congress simply were not appropriate at all. And the great thing about this country is we have, if you're a citizen, you're a citizen. And, there's no second class or third class or fourth class citizenship. If you become a citizen of this country, whether you're born here or whether you're naturalized and you become a full citizen and you have the same rights as everybody else has, the same rights as someone who has been here or their family's been here for 200 years. I think it's something that we all need to remember. It's one of the great things about this country.
Governor Mike DeWine, we appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Thank you.
That was Ohio Governor Mike DeWine talking to me and WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.